This is the Week in Review on this Friday, April the 29th. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will welcome in two guests from different political viewpoints to talk about the top political news stories of the week, and we'll welcome your input too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Kevin Hermaning is with us. He's a political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning.
And also with us is John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Kevin.
Well, John, how are you?
Just fine. The sun is shining up here.
Isn't it beautiful? Yeah, finally. We have the sun here as well. The two top stories in the news today don't really lend themselves to much political debate, but I don't want to ignore them. Let me get you both to give us a brief comments, your thoughts on those top two stories. NPR led with the royal wedding. Were you watching the royal wedding, John Smart, were you trying to avoid it at all costs?
No, I was watching it like most everybody else in the world, I think. And I've just got one funny story about that. I listened to your program in the last hour with Professor Farley, and I thought he went a little bit overboard myself. But the people of Great Britain have a different sense of their royalty. And they relish it, and that's, in a sense, it's because it ties them to their traditions. And I always remember something that a friend of mine told me years ago. He was a Brit who worked in the British Foreign Office, and he accompanied Her Majesty on a trip to a state visit to France. And he said the people of Paris were falling all over themselves to get a glimpse of Queen Elizabeth, and all he could think of was, didn't they cut the heads off their last king and queen?
Oh, no. Well, Kevin Hermaning, are you watching this spectacle?
Actually not. I'm out of town on the West Coast, and So it's a little bit earlier out here, and I'm attending a veterans organization conference right now. But I was watching a lot of the coverage earlier in the week and even yesterday as they were ramping up. What I find most interesting about it, I think, is how it appears that Americans are even more smitten with the entire affair than are the Brits. Obviously, it's a big deal over there, but when you look at the way that the coverage is playing, you don't hear a lot of Americans, at least as many people here as over there, saying, well, maybe the monarchy should go. Well, we're not paying for it. We're not a part of it. It's, in many respects, it's almost like our personalities over here. We glorify sports personalities and media stars and certainly entertainers. It's different because, as John said, it's a tradition over there. And when you think of how big the reaches of the global Commonwealth is, it's a big deal for many people around the world.
Yeah. Well, you might be right. It was yesterday morning made me wonder a bit when royal wedding updates before the wedding even occurred were a lead story on some of the morning TV shows and not the devastating tornadoes that hit the southeast.
Mm.
And that was a bit much. But that's the other top story of today. The president is on his way to Alabama, I believe, to review all the damage from those tornadoes. Around 300 people killed in massive tornadoes, most of them in the state of Alabama. Just your thoughts, John Smart, on what's going on this spring with this wild weather and those awful tornadoes.
Well, what people keep saying, and I've been repeating myself, is that one might almost think that human beings have done something to kind of screw up the climate.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore's been telling us that for some time. The other thing that comes to mind is that people yesterday, up here in Park Falls, it was snowing yesterday. The sun would come out once in a while, and then it would snow. But everybody you ran into, they'd say, that's all right, I'll take it over tornadoes anytime.
Yeah, so, Kevin, did we do something to screw up the climate?
Well, I don't think that there was a political question.
No, there wasn't. But
leave it to John. Well, you know, we had our own tragedies up here in the Northwoods just a week and a half ago, and 2 weeks ago. We're still reeling from that. And, out of such travesty and challenges, the people seem to come together so well. Certainly that's happened in Merrill. other parts of the state of Wisconsin. And when you look at what's going on down south, I think you're starting to see real stories of heroism and community. And I think that's one thing. I don't think it makes Americans unique in that regard, but it certainly puts it on display well.
Yeah, we are talking with Kevin Hermaning and John Smart, our two guests for this edition of the Week in Review. Let's come home to Wisconsin now and talk about some of the issues making news in state politics. The recalls are front and center. The attempts to recall Democratic and Republican state senators in the state of Wisconsin, all over the controversy over the collective bargaining legislation. For the most part, I think the very latest is that an attempt to recall Mark Miller, a Democrat from Middleton. Or no, from Monona, has failed, and those trying to recall Republican State Senator Robert Coles of Green Bay have succeeded, and they have turned in their signatures. Kevin Hermaning, do you have any thoughts on the attempts to recall these state senators?
I think we still have a couple more that might be out there, aren't there? Two more, one on each side.
Yeah, actually, I don't. I'll look for the story. There's more than just those two. Those are just the very latest in the news.
Yeah, I meant the ones that were still outstanding, that they still have a few more days or week or so to file their papers. It all depends, of course, on when they started the effort. To be perfectly blunt, I do not think that this is the process that should have been used to express the displeasure of voters. I think that that's what the electoral process is all about, but I think that both sides in this effort are using a process that I think was put into the Constitution for egregious misbehavior, not for individuals or groups of people to express themselves in this manner because they're dissatisfied with a piece of legislation. Obviously, it's available. It's there. In this day and age of 24/7 media coverage and the social media networks that are out there, like Facebook and Twitter and the others, it's easy to gather people together and rally the troops, so to speak. It's going to be kind of interesting, I think, as we go forward. I think the more interesting aspect of this isn't the process that's being used. It's not that people are using a constitutional process, which they are, which I think is good. At least we have. It's a heck of a lot better than what's going on elsewhere in the world when they're dissatisfied with their leaders. No question about that. But I think you're only going to see maybe two people, maybe three, who are going to successfully be defeated, who are presently serving in their positions. I don't think it's going to change the makeup or the leadership in the Senate.
The recall signatures are expected to be filed there are at least nine Wisconsin state senators that are facing recall, and there were some attempts that failed this week. It looks like three Democrats, possibly four, have escaped having enough signatures filed. And again, I think today is the deadline for a couple of other races. But anyway, John Smart, what do you think what do you think of this effort?
Well, I think it's kind of inevitable, and I don't necessarily like. I agree with Kevin. I don't really like the idea of recalls. But I think it goes back to the initial problem. I don't think that Governor Walker and the Fitzgerald brothers really had any idea what kind of a giant they were waking up. And the people just got crazy, and I understand it, and I can see what's going on. And I would certainly not make any predictions, because I wouldn't have predicted last November. I'm not very good at making political predictions. But I think that it's a healthy thing that's going on right now. There's something else about this, and that is that I think that various party leaders in Washington and wherever had kind of set Wisconsin as a leader in some kind of a movement, in a sense, well, to put it more bluntly, to break the backs of the unions is any way that they could, and then Michigan and Ohio and so forth would follow suit. And I don't think that they really expected that they would wake up the sleeping giant, as I said, and I think that that's the recall efforts are the result of that, and I have no idea what's going to happen with it.
You thought, Kevin, that two, maybe three people would be recalled. Who do you think's most vulnerable?
Well, I think it's the same folks that people are talking about across the state. I think on the Democrat side, I think that Holperin, Jim Holperin and Dave Hansen up in the north part of the state, in the northeast part of the state, seemed to be the ones that have irked the ire of more people. And it seems to me, or it appears to me, having trying to observe it from the outside, that those are the two that the Republicans in the Senate are kind of targeting. And remember, there is a lot of outside influence in this campaign, in these campaigns as well, this overall effort. And I think on the Republican side, certainly Hopper needs to be worried, and prospectively Kapanke over on the west part of the state. It's not just Wisconsin that these union issues are rearing their ugly heads. Let's not forget what happened, I think it was yesterday or the day before, in Massachusetts, where the Democrats in the state assembly, I believe, either the state assembly or state house, regardless, they might only have one house out there, I don't exactly know, in Massachusetts, but they actually have a bill almost identical that did pass out in Massachusetts, and the Democrats control the House out there by something like 78%. And the big firefighters union nationally basically said that they're ordering all of their locals to abandon the Democrats and not turn out and support them. It's going to be very interesting to watch how the unions react to being targeted even by, quote, their own.
John Smart.
Yeah, that was the assembly in Massachusetts. The state senate in Massachusetts has yet to act on it, and Governor Patrick has said that he probably will veto it if it does pass. And I have no idea what brought that on. I haven't read enough about it to be able to give any kind of a definitive answer to that. But it's kind of scary that it's happening all over. And yes, Kevin's right. These union busting things are going on all over. As I said, Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida are likely to follow Wisconsin in the same line. But if all of this recall effort works, and if it actually does turn the Senate, which is entirely possible, they only need three seats to change the course of the Wisconsin Senate, in that case, I think everybody else is going to sit back and say, maybe we better look at this again.
Oh, and I finally found, Kevin, what you were asking about before. There, one campaign to attempt to recall Mark Miller failed to get enough signatures, but there is a second campaign organized by a Utah group with a May 4th deadline for signatures. So I guess that group has until May 4th.
I heard about that one, too. What's a Utah group getting involved in that about? I saw that in the news myself and didn't understand that.
Yeah, I thought a Utah group started the recalls against the Democratic state senators who left the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, what you have there is a loose coalition of Tea Party and conservative and Republican and NRA-backed organizations getting together to try to coordinate their efforts similarly to, not exactly the same, of course, but similarly to the way the unions at all levels are, and the Democrats are kind of playing hand in glove against the Republicans.
Yeah, all of the deadline for recall petitions against two Republican state senators is Monday. I think all six Republican senators have had the successful attempts to get enough signatures anyway, but still waiting on Senators Mary Lozich of New Berlin and Glenn Grothman of West Bend. Those two are pretty conservative districts, aren't they, John Smart?
Yes, they are. Yeah, they're pretty conservative districts.
Yeah. You know, missing in this conversation, Joy, is, and John, is the conversation about what prompted it. And obviously, John mentioned the one side of it, but the Republicans were not going to sit idly by and watch their Republican senators castigated, if you will, based on a vote that they've taken or a political position or view that they hold, but certainly. And so the Republicans, in my view, seem to feel, and it makes sense to me, that if people are going to go after the Republicans for doing their job, certainly there are people going to go after folks for not doing their job and standing in the way of observing and being a part of the political process. And so when the 16 Democrats headed down to Illinois, it made a perfect marriage of all of the reasons why government seems to not work very well.
Our guests are Kevin Hermaning and John Smart for this edition of The Week in Review. If you have a topic from the news this week that you would like to bring up, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking some about the recalls, we'll talk some about the recount in the state Supreme Court race that is getting underway. And we'll talk about the public hearing held this week on legislation that would require voters to show a photo ID at the polls and more. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon after 4, it's your views on the news. When you are given the opportunity to call in to talk about the news story of the week that is most important to you. It's your views on the news coming up with Ben Marins and his guest after 4 this afternoon. This is our regular Friday Week in Review when we have two guests from different political perspectives to talk about the issues making news each week. Kevin Hermaning, a former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, is one of our guests, and John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party, is with us as well. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to get in on the conversation or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, the recount in the state Supreme Court race got underway this week on Wednesday. It got off to a little bit of a wobbly start, though, in Waukesha County. John Smart, are you concerned about what's going on in Waukesha County?
Well, I think everybody in the state should be concerned about what's going on in Waukesha County. The county clerk is clearly not somebody who can really be depended upon. This last episode was not exactly the first time that she's gotten into some kind of trouble like this. And I'm sorry that it's come to this. I really am. And I don't necessarily feel like the recount is going to change the outcome, as it turns out. But it was within half of 1% of the total vote. And I think that people of the state are concerned enough about the efficacy of the process that we need to have this recount in order to do that. I sat in on the recount in Price County the other day on Wednesday, and it was interesting to see how it was handled. And I think that a recount is necessary simply to make everybody comfortable with the results as it turns out.
Well, what happened in Waukesha County on Wednesday is that apparently, the number on a seal on a bag was different than what it was supposed to be, and so that got people wondering what was going on there. This again was from the town of Brookfield. So, in any case, Kevin Hermaning, do you suspect anything's going on here?
Well, let us keep in mind that the issue you're just raising right now is not for the same municipality that was part of the controversy on the night or the morning after the election.
Oh, because it was the city of Brookfield and not the town.
That's correct. Yeah. So guilt by association only because of part of the name.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, obviously it's in the same county, but it has it's not related to the other issues that have been raised by the late reporting or the nefarious, depending on which side you're on, the nefarious appearance of these extra votes. I don't have a big problem, quite frankly, with the recount. It is part of our law. It's part of our Constitution. It's well within the bounds from a percentage perspective. I actually think that most people feel that there is nothing wrong and it's not going to be successfully overturned by Kloppenberg, who, of course, is the one who had to file for the recount itself. But the idea that we're going to overturn almost a half a percent of votes is very, very unlikely. It would be far outside the scale of any recount result being changed in the history. Well, certainly since 1980. I've looked at the numbers for the last 30 years across the nation, and there's never been an overturning of more than 0.5%, ever. Could I just make one other comment, Joy?
Yes.
On the recount thing, recall elections we were talking about in the last segment.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many people know that one of the people who is facing recall right now has already been through this process, and that's Jim Holprin.
Yes, he was. There was an attempt to recall him back in the day when spearfishing was an issue up in that area, wasn't it?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. Back in 1990, and he was elected in the recall with 64% of the vote.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I think he is the only state legislator to face this threat two times.
That's correct.
Let's talk about the photo ID measure that went before a public hearing this week. Lawmakers plan to vote on this bill in May, requiring photo ID at the polls, that we would have to show a state-issued photo ID before we vote. And if it passes in May, which is it's expected to, this would be in place for the 2012 elections, apparently. Kevin Hermaning, why do we need to show a photo ID at the polls?
Actually, I think we could use the exact same language that John Smart used earlier, and that's to put integrity back into the process. There are a lot of voters suspicious about the actual numbers of people who might be voting more than once. We already know that there are college students who vote in their hometowns as well as in their university election locations. Certainly, there have been some instances of fraud uncovered and prosecuted. Many people, myself included, believe that there are actually many instances of duplicate voting taking place. And quite frankly, if we have to if we need to show IDs, a photo ID to purchase a driver's or to get a driver's license, or to get a hunting license or a fishing license, and we try to, as a nation, put forth good voting practices around the world. If people in Iraq are told by the American government that they should have in their voting process the dipping of their fingers into a purple inkwell, what's wrong with doing it in the United States? You know what? We probably wouldn't have this problem that we've even faced in this most recent Supreme Court race had we had this bill passed back before the Supreme Court election. And I think that there are Republicans across the state, myself included, who do not think that they should have, in Madison, gone after the collective bargaining issue until after the photo ID requirement law was passed. This is actually one of the top priorities of Republicans in government right now.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I wanted you to clarify, Kevin, that if we had photo ID in place, we would not have which problem?
We would not have the problem of people voting more than one time.
Oh, okay. I thought you somehow connected that to the state Supreme Court race.
I did, because there are a lot of us, myself included, Republicans on our side of the table, who believe that there are folks who voted more than one time in the Supreme Court race, which has juiced the numbers, we believe, on the other side.
You know, and you just think that. You don't have any evidence to that effect?
Well, we already know that there are investigations going on in the University of Wisconsin campus election locations, as well as in Milwaukee by the Justice Department in Madison, to investigate whether folks have voted more than one time.
Well, John Smart, what about having a photo ID requirement so, you know, there's no way people can vote more than once?
Well, first of all, I think that the problem is greatly, greatly over-exaggerated, and I think that Kevin is falling into the Republican Party platform argument on that subject. At the last election, the General Accounting Board came across possibly up to 20 cases throughout the state of Wisconsin, and most of those were the cases of felons who had been convicted and served their time and didn't realize that they were not allowed to vote anymore. And they went ahead and voted and got caught. But that's about it. And investigations have shown nothing I tend to look at this, as do most Democrats, as just simply a means of suppressing the vote, and suppressing the vote among people who are most likely to vote Democrat, and that is young people, college students, minorities, the inner city poor, and so forth, the people that would have the most difficulty coming up with a voter ID. Now, yes, of course, most of us have driver's licenses, but I live in rural northern Wisconsin, and a lot of people I know are elderly. They do not have driver's licenses. They cannot drive. And up here, in order to get a state identification card, the state motor vehicle department, which would be presumably responsible for providing these identification cards, only comes to Park Falls 2 days a month. That makes it rather difficult in order for a senior citizen who has trouble getting around anyway to get one.
And I think that's nonsense.
I tend to think of this as a solution looking for a problem rather than a problem looking for a solution.
Kevin, you think that it's
I think that the idea that people can't get someplace once or twice a month to get a photo ID is nonsense. Obviously, they know when they would be coming in advance, and they can plan their schedules around it. Obviously, they don't have to worry about not being able to get to a polling place on election day. So they certainly could carve time out of their what's really nonsensical to me is the idea that seniors would buck this option. I don't think that those are the people who are opposed to it whatsoever.
Yeah, we have a number of callers on this topic, so let me take a call or two and have you respond. Chet in Athens, go ahead, please.
Yes, my concern is for the young college students and 18-year-old high school students who don't have driver's license, who are full-time students, and now they can't even show their student ID in order to vote. It seems to me we're trying to disenfranchise a large number of people. And secondly, the idea of a photo ID, you could have photo IDs with different addresses for different reasons. You could have a driver's license from Waukesha, and then when you move to Wausau, you need to get another driver's license. They don't take away your driver's license, the one that they replaced. So you could still have photo IDs if you're concerned about double voting. Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Well, clearly the legislature is going to have to address of what happens when somebody moves from one part of a state to another, changes addresses, or at the very least changes voting municipalities. If you move down the block, you'd probably still more likely vote in the same place. But obviously that's something that is going to be debated and going on in Madison. You know, this probably would have been more forward on the agenda of the Republicans in the state houses earlier this year, except for the state senators left and went to Illinois, because there is a financial aspect to this, and obviously that became the issue on any legislation needed the full quorum.
Yeah, what would be so wrong with letting college students use their college ID, which is not permitted in this legislation?
It's a great question. Among other reasons, I would think it's that just because you have a student ID from a university does not mean that you are still a student at that university.
And John Smart, are you share Chet's concerns?
No, yes, I do. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I'll just simply go back to what I said before. This action is intended to suppress the votes of what are conceived to be primarily Democratic voters. And that's the plan. It's the plan all over the United States, and I'm not changing my mind on that. Yeah. But I would like to add something. Kevin keeps bringing up this business about the 14 Democratic senators leaving the state. The purpose of that, and I think it needs to be made perfectly clear, the reason that they left the state was that it was the only way to slow down the process. It was to slow down the process so that more people would become aware of the issues involved. And that's exactly what was intended, and that's exactly what happened. It was not a means of escaping their responsibility. In fact, it was going above and beyond the call of their responsibility in order to do that. And I'm getting tired of hearing people saying that they were running off on their jobs or something like that. It was not an easy matter for those 14 to go off to Illinois and live in motel rooms and so forth. It was not at all. But it served its purpose. If it hadn't been for that, Governor Walker and the Fitzgerald brothers would have pushed this legislation through within a week. That was their plan. Mm-hmm. And then by the time the people of Wisconsin found out of what was going on and caught up with it, it would have been too late. And that's exactly what was intended, and that's exactly what happened.
Our next caller is Kevin in Reeseville. Hello, Kevin.
Hello. Hi. I was at the voter ID hearing on Wednesday, and there's two quick issues I'm going to mention. One, that what struck me is that 99, I was there from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., 99% of the people that spoke against the bill were all associated with the UW-Madison, either college professors or students. Now, I just heard that there was a 10,000 overvote in Dane County for the Supreme Court election, and I never really got a complete explanation of what that means, that overvote. Did there are 10,000 people that voted twice?
I'm sorry, we've got a lot of interference on the line there, Kevin. So the definition of the supposed overvote, my understanding is that there were 10,000 votes in Dane County that only voted for the state Supreme Court race and not no other race. Is that right, Kevin? You brought up this anomaly earlier.
Well, in fact, there have been some folks over, there have been some reports that the overvote of 11,000 people there—that's actually the number, not 10,000. It's close enough, but there were about 11,000 people who voted in just that race. Reportedly, all you have to do is add up the numbers of people who voted in that race compared to some of the others. It's not unusual, quite frankly, for there to be overvotes in all top of the ticket races, and of course. That would have been an important one back in, and I, quite frankly, don't recall exactly how the ballots were set up.
It's called an overvote, but I'm not sure why it's called an overvote.
Well, if there are, let's say, as people go down the ballot, they mm-hmm. tend to not vote. A certain percentage of people tend to not vote in the lower down the ballot mm-hmm. elections. And so you always see more people vote for the president in a November election than vote for the governor.
Right.
More people for governor than the state houses.
Yeah, so that's not all that suspicious then.
The size of it, I think, is what people are questioning.
Yeah. John Smart, do you have any thoughts on that?
I haven't seen anything official regarding any of those things, but I mentioned before that I was involved in the recount here in Price County, and there were a number of ballots where they only voted for the Supreme Court race, or conversely, they only voted for local races and did not vote for the Supreme Court race. So simply counting the ballots and then counting the number of votes per candidate and totaling it up doesn't come out very well.
Yeah. You know, we have some other issues to get to and need to move on from this issue. Though it looks like this is going to pass in Wisconsin, Kevin Hermaning, you're pretty sure we're going to have a photo ID law on the books?
I do. It may be a little more watered down than the governor and some of the Republicans in Madison would like. I do think it's going to pass. It actually brings us much more in line with some of the other states and certainly with most parts of the world. But it does. If it passed in its present form, again, which it's not likely to, it would make ours the most strict ballot access law in the country. When I say that, it's just the term that I use. I don't for a minute. I find it fascinating. John, you said that, or I guess it was the caller from Athens who said he knows a lot of full-time students, lots of full-time students without driver's licenses and other photo IDs. And, you know, I must live under a rock because, quite frankly, I don't know anybody who doesn't have a photo ID who's between the ages of 16 and 24. And I know quite a few kids because, quite frankly, I have two daughters exactly in that age.
Let's talk some about legislature might add the collective bargaining legislation, the law that's held up in the courts right now. They might revive that and put it in the state budget and pass it along with the state budget. John Smart, do you think that's a smart idea?
I think it would be very interesting, and I wonder why they have been avoiding it. Judge Sumi, when she put down her order on holding that legislation, basically told them that very thing. You know, weeks ago, she said, if you're really concerned about getting this passed, vote on it again. vote on it again with everybody present and see what you come up with. The problem with that, as far as the Republican leadership in the legislature is concerned, is that an awful lot of their legislators are getting cold feet about it because they're getting so much flack from all of the public demonstrations that are going on. And I also want to just give a plug for the fact that we hear about the public demonstrations in Madison, but we don't hear about them going on all over the state. There were 2,000-plus people that showed up in Washburn, which has a population of 2,000. There were about 500 that showed up here in Park Falls for a demonstration. There are people all over the state who have been demonstrating against this legislation, and I think that it's important to bring that up. And I think it would be kind of interesting right now if the Fitzgerald brothers decided to bring that up for another vote to see how many of their Republican stalwarts are going to have the courage to stick by their convictions.
What do you think, Kevin?
Well, I think that the Republicans are going to stick to their convictions. I think that, we all use certain phrases in our language and in our political talk. I do find it humorous every time John says, quote, the Fitzgerald brothers, as though they are the two guys riding into town, and they're the only two who are going to take control of the state house in Madison, when in fact you didn't see too many people bail on any of these bills over the course of the past 4 months. I think that there's a lot of unanimity among Republicans in Madison. People feel that after 8 years of neglect that there are certain laws that need to be attended to. And these things are the philosophical cornerstone of Republican politics. And we think that that's what resonated with the voters this year, this past year.
Former State Senator Pat Kreitlow, a Democrat from Chippewa Falls, announced this week that he will run for Congress in Wisconsin's 7th District against freshman Republican Sean Duffy. Does Pat Kreitlow have a good chance against Sean Duffy? We'll start with John Smart.
Yes, I think he does. Pat is an excellent candidate. He served very well as a state senator. And he has a lot of name recognition from his time as a newscaster on Channel 13, Eau Claire. And, yeah, I think he does. It'll be interesting, and I'm glad that he's announced so early, because it means that we're going to have a nice long campaign where we can really hash out the issues. I'd like to say a few things about Sean Duffy. He's an interesting character, and I don't just run him down or denigrate him because of his party affiliation. I thought it was interesting, for instance, that he defied the Republican Party bosses in the Congress by voting against the bill to try to cut funding for NPR and PBS, and because he said that his constituency depends on public radio and public television, as indeed we do. But then he turned around and voted for the Paul Ryan budget, which brought the whole thing back again. So it'll be interesting to see this play out, and I'm glad that he's going to have competition starting right away, because I think that the debate is an important one, not only for the 7th Congressional District, but for the state of Wisconsin and indeed for the nation.
And we'll talk about the Paul Ryan budget in just a moment, but your thoughts on Sean Duffy getting a challenger so soon, Kevin Hermaning?
No, this is about the time that Sean Duffy, in the process, I should say, that he announced he was challenging Congressman Dave Obey. It's a couple of months earlier, but I think what Pat Kreitlow was trying to do here is to distinguish himself ahead of some of the other prospective challengers that are likely to step forward and run against Sean Duffy, similarly to how Sean Duffy was trying to kind of jumpstart not only his own campaign, but to keep people out. I do find it interesting that it seems so far that his biggest issue, Kreitlow's biggest issue, is that he wants to tie Sean Duffy to Scott Walker, because, of course, the Republicans are going to tie Pat Kreitlow to Jim Doyle. The difference is that Kreitlow supported every position that Doyle took. He was in the state Senate when these things have been put forward and became law in our state, and I think has a track record to go after for the Republicans. On the other hand, Duffy certainly has never served in state government, and I heard him literally on a national broadcast just the other day. Maybe it was on Wisconsin, maybe it was in a Wisconsin radio interview last week, Friday. Now that I think about it, say that he's not weighing in on the positions that are happening in Madison because he's concentrating on national politics. Obviously, he has views on them, but he hasn't had to vote on them like Kreitlow did with Doyle.
We need to take our break. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Kevin Hermaning, who is a political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, and John Smart, a former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. We'll talk about, birth certificates and birtherism and the Ryan budget and town hall meetings that Congress members are holding about the budget. In just a moment. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's time for our Week in Review quiz question. We didn't want to ignore the royal wedding in the Week in Review, so it is the subject of our quiz question. There was some political controversy about some British VIPs that were left off the guest list, and that's the issue, or the issue, of the question. Which living British former prime ministers were not on the guest list? There were two, and you have to get them both. Which two living British former prime ministers were not on the guest list for the big royal wedding? If you know or want to guess, you have 5 minutes to call in your answer, and we will choose a winner from all of the correct answers. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And again, 5 minutes to guess, and we will announce the winner at the end of the hour. All right, let's talk about another big story of the week. This was President Obama releasing his original long-form birth certificate on Wednesday, trying to put an end to the rumors that he was not born in the United States. So, Kevin Hermaning, did the president really have to do this?
Yes.
Why?
Something he should have done 2 years ago, as the rumors continued to persist about the legitimacy of the short form that was released, which was a computer-generated nothing document, quite frankly. Everybody who you know probably has a traditional birth certificate with signatures of doctors and signatures of the mom and or dad. And it has been a sideshow. It has been a distraction. It has been a controversy. And the president loved the distraction because it took the attention of so many people, unfortunately, away from the real political issues, the real financial challenges that have been put before the American people. And the president, like I said, I think that his political advisors were telling him, you know what? Let's just make these folks look out to be like kooks. And I don't think they were. I think that they had every legitimate right to expect and demand it, especially as people started to raise the concerns. He decided to stand in the way of it for over 2 years, almost three actually now. But, look at Donald Trump. All of a sudden he goes on the national stage, not just Fox News and some of the conservative talk shows. He's on the traditional TV networks. And all of a sudden, the news media decides, maybe it's an issue that we have to look into. And so that's the reason this finally came to a head, because when you saw Donald Trump on Good Morning America saying he doesn't believe that the president is a citizen of the United States because he wasn't born here, that's really what finally has led to these issues.
Well, is this going to put an end to the issue, John Smart?
I think it's funny that that Kevin thinks this was a White House conspiracy in order to develop the nuttiness of the Republican candidates. But Donald Trump and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and all the other wackos on that side of the aisle are just kind of crazy with this. And I'm sorry that the president was required to go to this length in order to prove that he was indeed a natural-born citizen of the United States. And anybody who really looked into this, if they went back and decided, now let's see, do you really think that President Obama's mother and father had this plot that their new baby was going to end up running for president of the United States so they could have him born in Kenya and then somehow spirit this newborn baby back to Hawaii, which they couldn't have afforded to do anyway, if we know anything about the parents at the time, in order so that he would have be able to qualify for being a natural-born citizen? The whole thing is just preposterous. And I think it's very funny that Donald Trump is now saying that he has done the nation a great service by forcing the president's hand to make him come up with the long form, which the state of Hawaii has said from the beginning was preposterous because the form that he had presented in the first place is what's considered legal tender in the state of Hawaii. So I just think the whole thing is crazy, and I'm glad that it's over with, but except it won't be over with because the conspiracy theorists are going to just come up with something else. Now Donald Trump is saying, you know, how did he get into Columbia? How did he get into Harvard? Were his grades really good enough, or was he pushed through on some kind of a plan, you know, to get black students into Harvard Law School? I mean, the conspiracy people are going to continue no matter what. And Donald Trump is out for Donald Trump, and I think Sarah Palin's out for Sarah Palin, and so forth and so on, and I think it's all silly.
Well, let me...
Hey, Don, don't you think, do you know folks on your side of the political fence over the last 3 years who've simply said, you know, why didn't he just get it over with?
Well, except that the form that he did present, Kevin, was what the state of Hawaii considers to be the legal form.
I'm sorry, haven't you had people on your side of the fence who you've been in conversations with who've said, why doesn't he just put out the other one look rather than making it look like something's been hidden?
No, actually, no, I haven't heard that.
Interesting. Okay.
We have just a couple of minutes to go. Let me move on to another issue. Congressman Paul Ryan and other Congress members are holding town hall meetings while they're back in their districts. Paul Ryan got some boos at first, but the last couple of town halls have not been real boisterous anyway. But I'm wondering briefly, Kevin Hermaning, do you think that Paul Ryan's proposed federal budget is going to help or hurt Republicans?
I think it's going to help Republicans. It's going to help to coalesce the issues facing the country, the issues of entitlement reform, the issues of budgetary reform, the issues of getting rid of or reducing, rather, our federal deficit and then hopefully someday our debt, and the issue of preventing the United States from being put in a position where it might have to default on its obligations to investors, including those abroad. I think what it's going to become is the referendum, if you will, or the litmus test for Republican presidential candidates when they start talking in Iowa and Massachusetts, New Hampshire and the rest of the states. Every time they appear before a political audience that plays a role in selecting delegates to the national convention in caucuses and primaries, I think you're going to see people weighing in one way or the other as to whether they support the Ryan plan, the roadmap, if you will, and to what extent. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing because this discussion is long overdue. And I think it could go all the way to the White House as far as becoming the referendum on in November of 2012.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, John Smart, you get last word, but only about 30 seconds.
Well, I hope that that happens, quite frankly, because I think the Ryan plan is first of all, talking about it going to help reduce the deficit. It's chipping away at about 5% of the deficit. It's not doing anything about the major part of it, so it's not going to really amount to much at all. And if the Republicans want to run on the Paul Ryan book, that's just fine with me.
And we'll leave it there. I want to thank both of you very much for being with us. John Smart and Kevin Hermaning, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And it's time now to announce the winner of our Week in Review quiz. The winner is Mo in Madison. Congratulations, Mo. Mo, he knew that Tony Blair and Gordon Brown of the Labour Party were the two living British prime ministers, former prime ministers, that were not invited to today's royal wedding. Have a good weekend. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again on Monday. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.